Ron Shalwison is the executive director of the Newark Trust for Education, a hub for all things education in Newark and the country. At times, we're discovering how ill-prepared we are as a nation to effectively bring the classroom into our homes. Shalwison has insights on how to help teachers, students, and families succeed when their lives have been upended. Ron Shalwison joins us now on the WBGO Journal. Ron, for those listening who are unfamiliar with the Newark Trust for Education, can you give us a rundown of what it's all about?
I'm sure. The quick answer to that is that as an organization, we try to bring people, resources, and ideas together around the complex issues that are facing the education system in Newark in order to create a common vision and then move to action against that vision. So, for example, all of our students in Newark are in need of, meaning just as a regular developmental piece, not something that is an intervention or that it is something for kids that are somehow less than, right? All students are, as part of their schooling, are developing socially and emotionally. That is a big issue, and really how to best integrate that work into the day-to-day work of school to make sure that every child is moving to their next developmental milestone is one of the issues that we've taken on as a primary issue. Our work is about bringing together the mental health providers, for example, the what are called tier two interventions, or really that is small group work, the opportunity for kids to socialize together in small like groups, and then their full school work around school climate and culture. So bringing together all of the groups that are doing that kind of work with the school personnel in order to design plans that positively impact all of their children and give the kids the right supports at the right time. It's that kind of work. So we do that work in socio-emotional learning, and we also do that work of kind of galvanizing thought leaders, parents, and community members around early learning in the 0-3 space.
Ron, it seems like we're hearing about two scenarios during the coronavirus pandemic. One where we're hearing about unbelievable teachers and students and parents being so creative, especially with new technology. But then there's the other side, because not everyone has the technology that they need.
So I would frame the question just a little bit differently, Doug. I actually think that all of the families and teachers have the capacity to be creative and think through different ways of engaging in their learning and kind of showing progress in their learning. The technology piece to me is a tool, and you're absolutely right. There's a wide variety in access to the technology, and that takes on different forms. So it's not only having a device, but does that device have the processing speed necessary to engage in, for example, video conferencing? Do you have the appropriate microphones? Things along those lines. Is your screen size adequate to do the kind of work that, right? So there are those issues around technology. But I will say that even if you were to pull the technology, this is a place of real learning, it feels to me, right? If you were to pull the technology place as a place where you see some inequities, what is the response to that, right? And so one response is trying to get more technology into the hands of more people, which is great, and we should pursue that. But I do believe, and we as an organization are really pushing hard on, what are other types of activities that young people and their families could engage in that actually are aligned with the skills and content that they need to learn and don't require those kinds of technologies, right? And so, for example, I think I've been thinking a lot about this and talking to parents, and there's a really interesting moment in Newark, right? For many years, there has been a push for culturally relevant curriculum, for representing the different cultures that are part of Newark's amazing population in the educational process. And so, for example, what would it look like if we actually created a framework for families and their children to explore their cultures and actually create lessons and curricular units around those things that are important to their families, to their histories, and then connect that to some of the topics that our students are currently required to learn, right? That wouldn't necessarily kind of video conferencing that we're talking about. It wouldn't require some of the production, right? But it would require kind of the research skills, the talking skills, the interviewing skills, the connecting and relevance pieces that we so much talk about. So it would be beneficial for the families and the kids in their learning, but it would also be beneficial long-term for the district in that they could collect these and actually use them as the basis of kind of curricular integration. So I think thinking creatively about this new context, what the resources are that are available in this new context, home provides a whole series of resources that are not available in the classroom, right? Our families have amazing strengths. They have great knowledge. Our kids actually can interact with their families in a different way around their formal learning requirements. But if we structure it to actually build on those strengths, I think everyone at the end of the day can benefit.
Some great ideas that you just passed along there. But when it comes to the parent and student right now, what kind of stories are you hearing from that have amazed you?
Yeah, so there have been some, you know, I think that there's some really amazing strengths that have come out of some of these conversations. And then there's some challenges that I think we need to listen to and think about in our future planning. So, you know, on the strength side, you know, being with your child, having the opportunity to be with your child for this extended amount of time and engage in their learning has really pushed parents to think more deeply about what their relationship to the formal learning process is. I had a conversation yesterday with a mom who was really talking about kind of where the conversation has been, right? So if you listen to educational conversation for the longest time, as long as I can remember, we often talk about parents as partners in the education. But when you look for examples of what that means, it's hard to find those examples, right? And right now, because the context changed and because our kids and our families are, you know, unfortunately somewhat sequestered in their homes and are tied together in a way for this hopefully short period of time, but we know that it will be extended a little bit. They are looking to see how they can actually learn together. So really fostering that notion of learning together, parents are excited by that, you know, looking for the common everyday opportunities for learning, right? The budgeting piece that they're doing as they're trying to make decisions around the resources that they have available and the responsibilities they have, whether it's critically looking at television shows or movies, right? Engaging in those kind of conversations, a little bit of a difference, right? In some cases where just sitting and watching a movie has now become, let's sit, watch the movie, and then let's talk about it. Let's ask questions about it. What did you think? What did it connect to? So that kind of thing has been really positive, and families have been excited about it. The connection to the teachers have been an amazing resource for families, and having that real-time, live time with teachers, people have talked positively about. I believe that the challenges have really been on the flexibility the flexibility side, right? Understanding that there has been a huge disruption to our kids' lives, right? They don't get up in the morning, get ready and go to school, and then come home. They now are engaging in learning opportunities in the home with their families, and families as a unit have different schedules and routines and workflows, and those workflows have all been impacted. And so, in some ways, I don't think we've been able to break the mental model where parents are working from 8 to 5 and students are in school from 8 to 3 and are doing after school from 3 to 6. We still, I think, are working in that mental model, but that doesn't necessarily work in the reality of a home, right? And so, if you have multiple children and you're responsible now for preparing, you know, their lunch, and you have work that you need to do online, if you have the luxury of doing work from home, because some families don't have that luxury, and some parents still do have to go out, and so that creates a whole other issue around who is taking care of the child and how the family structure has to adapt in order for that to occur. But if they are in the home, right, really thinking about when they could do certain kind of things and when supports are available to them, has been a little bit challenging, right? So teachers still work 8 to 3, but families may not be able to access the fourth 8 to 3. And quite honestly, we're putting quite a bit of pressure on teachers. We forget sometimes high school teachers could have up to 120 students on their register. Elementary school teachers can have 30. And so we're asking teachers to be responsive to 120 families while still taking care of their own children and their own families. At a certain point, that model doesn't quite work. And I will say that to a T, every parent that I have spoken to has talked about the amazingness of teachers and their responsiveness to their needs. But I just don't think long-term we could support a system where that 24/7 type of responsiveness is built in, right? So I think kind of thinking differently, for example. I've been playing around with, and I'm putting it out just to see if there are any bites. In a city like New York, we teach algebra in 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. That probably means we have somewhere between 80 and 120, maybe my math is wrong, but teachers of algebra, right? All of those teachers have responsibilities at home. Some of those responsibilities, they may be morning responsibilities, others may be afternoon responsibilities, depending on how the family has split up care. Some of them may not be able to really work during the day and may be better off working on a Saturday, right, than a Thursday or something along those lines. So what if we actually polled those 100 teachers, 150 teachers, asked them what their availability was, and then allow them to kind of do the online portion in those spaces where their availability was, and then organize those online support sessions by topic, right? So you could imagine something along the lines of there will be 3 opportunities for support in the addition of polynomials in the morning, 3 opportunities in the mid-afternoon, 3 opportunities in the evening, and 3 opportunities on Saturday, right? So I just think, and again, I don't know that that's the right answer. All I'm saying is, can we think differently, given that our structure, our infrastructure has changed? Can we actually think outside of that infrastructure to create a new structure that is better suited for our current situation?
Let's talk about the school board election being moved to May 12th and only being by mail. Does this concern you? Obviously, it's a whole different system now if it's going to be done by mail-in only. What are your thoughts about the school board election?
Right. Well, I think in general, the school board election is such an important forum to get community voice into the decision-making process for the education of our young people. And so I was actually happy to hear that they had retooled the system so that residents could vote without really having to make the decision between their health and their civic responsibility. It's an interesting, I find everything at this moment in time to be somewhat of an interesting experiment, right? We have this crisis that has caused us to change our actions, and so now we have this mechanism for voting. Voting in the school board elections has been low for a long time, and I think there are a number of factors that have contributed to that. So I'm interested to see what happens. We certainly are supporting all of the get out the vote efforts, but it would be really interesting to me if we saw an uptick in the number of residents that participated in the election this time, and then whether or not we could attribute that to the mail-in quality of this, or we can attribute it to the fact that we are now completely under local control, but it'll be a good study, it seems to me, in learning to see what happens.
Also, there's going to be a question whether to approve a tax increase to help fund the city's schools. That's what voters are going to be deciding. That's a huge matter that will have to be addressed.
Right. And again, I think that finding the information on the school budget and understanding the portion of the budget, the impact of that, because I know as we've looked at it, oftentimes the numbers that are recorded on there, are the right numbers, but the portion impact is different than those numbers. And so for residents to understand that and then to make the decision, you know, that comports with their thinking. Obviously, the school system was under a large hit, or has been under a large hit this year, given all of the changes that needed to occur in order to give the families and the children the support that they need to continue kind of moving ahead with their education. So I know that that's going to be, and depending on what kind of relief comes down the line, but paying attention to that question and having input into that question is important. Sometimes voters tend to leave that question off or don't see the question. So we really are recommending that they do the homework and then vote their conscience on that question. We at Newark Trust on our site, newarktrust.org, under Campaign Central, have a lot of information that would be useful to voters in kind of studying the issues and then making their decision.
Ron, anything else that you would like to add?
It's an amazing moment in time, right? And on, through adversity, hope, right? And hopefully through adversity, action. And so we have been, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, reacting in some ways to this new situation. And it's appropriate and needed, and we had to get the system up and running, and we had to get support to homes and families. And we, you know, there were a lot of things that we've had to do, and it's important that we've done them. And I think overall it's been a really good job in making sure that things are in place. You know, I guess right now my big push is there a way to pause a little bit, right? Or to parallel track and to think, this particular situation may go on, you know, another 4 to 6 weeks. But whether it's 4 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks or 8 to 12 weeks, right, it's going to go on for some time. And the implications of it are both far-reaching and long-lasting. And so can we pause, can we organize, and can we systematically study what is going on in order to design our new reality? One of my little things in my own mind is people are saying, you know, when we return to normal, but I don't believe there's not a normal to return to, right? This has changed us. It has changed who we are as a community, who we are as a society. And so we need to be planning for a new reality. So can we make time to pause, really look to see what has worked, where there needs to be some changes, and quite honestly, and most importantly, I read this article in The Avenue, the Brookings Institute, where the authors talked about COVID-19 potentially being the opportunity for a reset button. And they were talking about that in the context of all of the inequities that we know have existed, and because of this have really just come out and are full front burner. And so as we move forward, knowing and feeling so intensely these inequities, can we actually make changes now for the new phase that we're going to walk into? And so that's really the call from my perspective. Let's continue to address the immediate needs of our families and our students, but let's make parallel time to, in a systematic way, address the inequities that have really risen to the forefront and promise and work toward minimizing those inequities as we move into a new phase.
We certainly appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated the time.